Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the podcast. I am Chet Haas from the Android UI Toolkit team.
I am Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
And today we have...
Hey guys, I'm Roman Nurek from the Developer Relations team, I guess, yeah.
Excellent. And today we're talking about all kinds of things. The interesting thing about your role on the developer relations team is that, so I think of developer relations as being the developer outreach. You go to conferences, you write articles and samples, but some of the people on the team or some of the roles on the team, like you and Chris Baines and others, there's actually a lot of code, production code going on as well. Right? So I think we're going to get into a bit of that today. So I don't know, quick overview, all the stuff that you've written. Go. Excellent. Okay, maybe let's take a different approach. Let's go one by one. So Muse, tell me about Muse.
Yeah, so Muse is it's actually, I guess, the second app that I released on Google Play. The first was Dash Clock, and they actually are both somewhat similar in the sense that they have this kind of plug-in component, right? So Dash Clock is was this lock screen widget, right, that showed you your clock as well as a bunch of other things. And app developers could extend it, right, by adding other things to see on your lock screen. And then the second app was Muse, right? And Muse was really, it's this live wallpaper, right? The idea is that you your icons are pretty high contrast, right? And you probably care mostly about your icons on your, you know, on your home screen. And so the idea was to build a wallpaper that let you focus on your icons, but still show you something interesting in the background. And when you want to see your wallpaper, when you want to, you know, see the high resolution full version of, let's say, you know, your kids' photos, right? You would just double touch or double tap on the wallpaper, and it would kind of, you know, go into full contrast or full mode. And so the plugin component of Muse was that you can actually, you know, developers could write, you know, different sources for wallpapers. So Muse came with, you know, this default source, which was just famous paintings from wikiart.org. And it also came with another source, which is your local photos. But developers could also extend it by creating their own sources. So people have written, you know, Tumblr extensions, you know, Flickr sources, a million different sources that pull in from all over the place to show you different wallpapers.
And they did this by changing the core app itself? Is this open sourced, or this was actually a plugin component?
Yeah, it was actually a plugin mechanism. It's all done through, well, there's a bunch of different components, but it's all done through basically intents and services and so on. So there's this basic, this API that that a developer could, I guess, kind of add to their project. It's just a Gradle import, right? It's in Maven Central. So a developer could add this API. They would extend a base class, which is basically a service. They'd put something in their manifest with the right intent filter, and then Muse would kind of crawl your system for any app that respects those, you know, those intent actions. It'll show you a list. So there's no kind of, you know, code changing to Muse itself. It's really just kind of an API plugin architecture.
So let's take a step back. We dove in pretty quickly to start talking about particular applications, but you have a particular focus on the developer relations team and with Android development in general. So maybe you can give us sort of a broad overview of, I don't know, let's say Roman Nurek.
Yeah, I'll summarize my entire life in like two
Please.
Minutes, maybe.
Maybe actually five words. Go.
Five words. Android design and development. No,
I
mean, like,
four.
Well, maybe we can do it chronologically. So I think I first started working with you back in the, I want to say, ice cream sandwich days, when you were doing the Asset Studio, right? And so do you want to talk about what Asset Studio was?
Yeah, so, I mean, let me start even further back. I mean, I started back in late 2009 when Android was kind of just kind of getting prominence, I guess. And there weren't really any developer advocates, people that were talking to third-party developers that were focusing on design, right? So I kind of immediately latched on, given my kind of art and design background, and engineering background, and I kind of started thinking a lot about design. And I was starting to, you know, figure out what are the main pain points for developers and designers, in some sense, building for Android. And the Asset Studio was kind of one of my first forays into trying to help make things better for designers and developers. So I realized that, you know, making icons for your Android app is kind of annoying. I mean, there are a lot of different densities. There's a lot of different sizes and styling and so on that you have to, you know, deal with. And a lot of it is kind of automatable, mechanical almost. So I built this asset studio that basically lets you choose a source image, like, you know, an SVG icon, a very large SVG icon, or your logo, right, your app logo. Or even a piece of text, you know, a character or two in whatever font you want, and it will generate the right icons for you. It'll apply all the right styling, it'll apply the right sizing, and it will create all the different versions for the different densities. And so that's still around today, but that was kind of one of my first forays into the space. One of the nice things about this, and actually one of the things I really love about it, is that it's all built on the web, so it works in almost any browser, almost any modern browser, on any platform, and it works wherever you are. You don't have to install anything. So that's kind of one of the nice things about the Asset Studio, is that it's a nice, easy to use web app.
So it's web development to improve Android development. I like it. It's the best of both worlds.
Absolutely.
So actually, what was your background? So I mean, it's obvious to me from all the projects you've been working on that there's always a design influence or design focus to what you're doing. But I actually don't know what you were doing before you appeared here.
Yeah. So I've been programming since age 10. I've been using Photoshop since I don't even know which version, like age 11, I guess. But I've always kind of done both graphic design and not so much UI design, but graphic design. And art when I was younger, so I kind of latched onto that as an area that I could really help people, in Android development.
It seems to be working. The next project that I was aware of was the design preview stuff that came along in was it Honeycomb?
I'm not even sure when. I mean, this is ages ago. But the design preview tool is also kind of awesome. The idea there is that we want to help designers have a tighter feedback loop, right? With seeing their work, their high fidelity visual mockups on an actual device. I think the tool was actually started by somebody on the Android Framework team. I think it was Amit. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. But he started this tool, and it was purely a command line tool. And I kind of took it and built a UI around it. I made it a little bit more kind of production ready, although it's still not perfect in that sense. But the idea is that you connect your device, your Android phone, tablet, Android Wear device actually right now. You connect it to your computer. And you pick a region of the screen that you want to share onto that device, and it will mirror it at a decently high frame rate. It's not like 30 FPS, but it's maybe like 10 FPS or something, or 5 FPS. So the idea is that a designer can very quickly see what their high fidelity mockup will actually look like in real life on a device of their choosing. It's very similar to a Sketch Mirror that's out there that also works for Android. Not Sketch Mirror. I think it's Scala Preview. I'm confusing things.
And this is running on, is this another web app?
This is not a web app. This is actually it's a Java app that that I've actually specially packaged for Mac, but it works on Linux, Windows, and everything else. It's just a Java app.
Okay, it so actually desktop runs, Java app.
Sorry?
Desktop Java.
Desktop Java, that's right.
So is that something that could be incorporated into the tools? If only there were someone on the tools team that could speak to that.
Yeah.
Actually, I remember around that time, I remember begging Roman for icons. So at that point, if you ran the DDMS tool, would you like to guess what the icon for the DDMS tool used to look like? I could not figure out what it was. It was like this weird brown and blue stuff. And so I asked... Xavier, what is this icon? He's like, oh, we just took a screenshot of Dalvik, the town in Iceland, which is what Dalvik was named for, and we just kind of used that as the icon for DDMS. So it was a bit hard to figure out. So Roman basically contributed new icons for all the tools, for emulator, for DDMS, for the ADT bundle, all of it.
Yeah, that was a fun set of icons. I remember it was the first time that we really tried to have some sort of, dare I say, branding or some sort of consistency across the icons so that, when you use one tool, like the ADT bundle back in the day, right? and you use another tool like Hierarchy Viewer or DDMS or whatever, you know, when you look down on your, you know, Mac dock or you know, your Windows, whatever it is on Windows, I don't use Windows, but when you look over
start
there...
Start thingy.
Yeah, the start thingy. They kind of look consistent, and it feels like you're using a single suite of tools rather than, like, individual bespoke, you know, things.
Yeah.
I think my favorite icon is... So there's a pair of icons. One of them is, I think, the HProf dump tool, and the other one is... I can't remember, maybe TraceView. And one of them has a stop sign, and the other one has a small stop sign. So it's really easy to tell which tool you're using.
That seems like something that we should try to resolve. If it's
yeah,
not
I don't think that's Roman's fault. I think that the icons you did were the actual launcher icons. I think the internal icons in DDMS probably still haven't been updated. So if you have any free time, Roman, let's talk afterwards.
Actually, one of the things I should mention, before I joined Google, I interned for a company down in Virginia that my brother worked for, and I actually made like 200 to 300 16x16 icons for them. That was my entire like summer project one year. It was actually really fun, but also, you know, the challenge is one thing that designers love is the challenge of new constraints, right? Trying to fit so much, trying to pack so much information into 16x16 is ridiculously hard. But yeah, it's a fun thing. It's very interesting. Maybe we should.
Well, I'm really glad to hear you say that because, boy, do we have a task for you. All right. So to go back to the Asset Studio, that we then poured it into Eclipse and later Studio, so that the functionality there is actually available in the tools today. It's also available, of course, as a separate web app. And in an upcoming version of Studio, we also have the material improvements that was recently added to Asset Studio.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's one of the things that like that I really believe in. I think that, you know, it's great to have, you know, this web tool, but I feel like having a single consistent workflow within one IDE is also really useful. You don't have to jump around between various things. So I'm a huge proponent of doing whatever we can to get it in the tools.
Yeah, there's definitely a move lately where we are trying to integrate more and more into Android Studio, and it's kind of a relief. Like, we do have a wealth of really powerful tools, especially some of the performance tools that the folks on in my area use a lot, but some of them are launched from the command line and some are in monitor or DDMS, or you know, you have to know all these special tweaks to access this special version, so it's really helpful when we can actually put it into a single unified IDE so everyone knows where they are and how to get to them.
Yeah, and that is clearly the Android Studio strategy, right? Is to have sort of a overall umbrella tool that where everything is integrated and works together instead of like these separate disparate tools you have to have seen a framework talk to know about.
Although I like people to see the framework talks, so
yeah,
you know,
you like
maybe
having secrets to tell people.
That's right. It's the benefit for showing up at the conference. Okay, so material design came up. I think of the time when you were doing your early apps in Asset Studio, as we had particular interesting design things happening either in our UX team or individuals like yourself doing interesting design stuff, but I feel like material design was a huge step forward in terms of coming up with a consistent platform-wide approach to how we design things. I don't know if you want to phrase that any differently, but what was your interaction with material design sort of concepts and development and how you integrated into the app development you were doing?
Yeah, so material design, I mean, I first heard of it, gosh, I guess 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. I'm not really sure. But my first interaction with the team was just kind of seeing some of the awesome work. And I guess the very first time you see material design, there's this kind of this feeling, especially if you've come from like an Android design background, there's this feeling of like, oh, like this is great. This is something that really feels like, you know, not, I don't want to say the pinnacle. We're never, you know, at the pinnacle of design, but it really feels
local
like
maxima.
A local maxima, right? Of the things that we've been trying to do, right? Like, it really polishes the warts, the various warts from, you know, from Hollow. So yeah, when I first saw it, I was like, this is great. How do I get involved? It was quite a process. I think the first couple of things that I did was made sure that the team had everything lined up for their Google I/O announcement. So I helped them quite a bit with that. We also started, you know, after the announcement, I guess, we started, you know, putting together, you know, presentation materials and demos and sample code and things like that for material design. So that was also really fun. I guess one of the other things that I worked on with material design was before the announcement, we were working on the Google I/O app at the time. And again, material design was announced before that. So we were working with the material design team to do reviews for our Google I/O app. So the very my main first exposure applying material design was trying to figure out, along with Nick Butcher and Mike Denny, other design advocates, trying to figure out how do we apply material design for the I/O app. And what came out of that was, I think, kind of a lot of good materials, pardon the pun, but a lot of good ideas around, you know, how to apply it in different situations. That kind of drove some of our messaging, I guess, externally in the future.
Probably also kind of fun trying to do that in an application where we needed people using the app before the conference, but we actually weren't showing material design stuff until the conference.
Yeah, I mean, we actually had two versions. We had the pre-IO version, and we had two or three versions, right? We had the pre-IO version that only worked on, like, you know, KitKat and earlier. And then we had the at I/O version that worked on KitKat with all of its Android L preview features in a separate branch, I believe. So yeah, that was kind of fun. We like, for example, the fab, the floating action button, we actually didn't incorporate a fab. We had a kind of an inline rectangular button that we switched at I/O to a circular floating action button. It was kind of an interesting challenge.
Yeah, we always like to do more work around I/O because, you know, otherwise we got nothing to do, so we may as well just pile on more.
Well, I think that the I/O scheduling application also sort of serves as a, I don't want to say sample, but I think that it does a lot of non-trivial things that it's kind of hard to find apps out there that you can get the source code for that also incorporates sort of the latest recommendations in UI and everything. And so I know a lot of people go and look at it when the source code is made available, usually a month or two after I/O.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts of working on it. Unfortunately, this year I'm not working on it, but I mean, every single year that I have worked on it, it's been kind of awesome and also absolutely terrifying, knowing that, you know, tens of thousands or thousands of people or developers are going to be looking at that code and copying some of it and kind of trying to study it. So it's a really, you know, really fun project to work on. But it's also absolutely terrifying, not just because you have to ship by an exact date, but, you know, because it's going to be copied and pasted. And that's actually one of the harder things with writing good sample code, right? Like, people are going to be copying and pasting the heck out of it, so you can't take those shortcuts that you sometimes, hopefully, aren't taking.
I always take the shortcuts. I mean, that's definitely one of the more interesting things that I think the developer relations group does in general, is sort of try to take the stuff that we're working on in the inside and package it in a way where people outside can A, understand it, and B, use it. So we will put together tests and sample code for the features that we work on, but we really don't have time to dive in deeply and do it in a real context. Or when I do tutorial videos or articles, I necessarily create very simplistic examples because I want to focus on exactly the point that I'm trying to get across. But I'm not going to spend, you know, tons of time building in a data-driven application that does something real, because that's not the thing that I'm trying to tell people. However, developers in the real world also need to know how to incorporate things like material design into their real-world applications. And I think the I/O app and some of the other stuff that you've done does a much better job of that, of putting these things into a real context.
Yeah, totally. And that's one of the things that I think that I'm trying to get other folks on developer relations to start doing as well, is trying to figure out not just what kind of unit test-like samples can we put together, but how can we put together larger demos, not only on Android, but also on the web, right? Material design is not just something for Android. It's a platform. It's a design language, I guess, that works across many platforms. I'm trying to figure out how can we put together larger scale demos, more kind of real-world demos, for both Android and the web, to kind of highlight these different parts of our developer platform.
Yeah, there's that conflict that I've encountered in the past, and I always back off and just do the simple apps, because I think both are necessary. I think in the context of a conference talk or a particular article where you want to explain certain concepts, if you pile on something like the I/O app and say, okay, let's understand this, this architecture, it's sort of too much to absorb in a small sitting. Mm-hmm. It's something that you need to kind of take some time with and wade through and look at different aspects of. And I've seen people try to do this in conference talks before, where, you know, they were trying to explain a particular feature of an API, and then they bring up this, you know, mapping geo application that, you know, has a massive architecture behind it, and you get kind of lost in the weeds. And so I tend to go the direction of saying, well, here is the one thing that my application will do because that's all I care about teaching at this point. Mm-hmm. But then there's the other aspect where then they need to go home and learn how to do, you know, Android development on a large scale with real applications, and that's where things like this are much more useful.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. It's actually one of my complaints, I guess, when I first joined Android, the Android Developer Relations team. One of my complaints was API demos, right? Because you want to learn one little feature, right? But then you unpack this massive project with hundreds of resources and Java source files, and it makes it a bit cumbersome. But yeah, I totally agree that like having a bite-sized chunk of a sample to just really, you know, teach you one specific thing is critical.
And that, that kind of dovetails with the templates that we originally put into Eclipse and we now have in Studio. And you were really involved with that from the beginning, right? I think, in fact, you did the first prototype of the integration that actually spit out this stuff. So the idea is that instead of samples, we take code that we intend to be a sample, but we parameterize it, right? So that, so we don't have hard-coded, you know, sample activity. It's, you know, dollar name activity. Mm-hmm. And then we have UI code in the IDE to go and, you know, ask for inputs of these things, and then we generate the code. Have you done anything in that area lately, or...?
Yeah, I wish I had more time to work on app templates. It's one of the things that I was really, really pushing for back before we had app templates, right, was some way of giving you a better starting point, right? Back in the day when you did file a new project, you'd get kind of this very simple, you know, single thing that we couldn't really, you know, tweak over time. We couldn't give, you know, developers too many options to manipulate that starting point.
Well, basically, we give you a new project that had a linear layout that said, hello, world.
Right.
And then you were on your own, right? And then you could go to our tutorials and copy out code and then having to try to search through place stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think even if you think of, like, the I/O scheduling app, right, that is being used as a conference app for many others. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be interesting if you could take that app and parameterize it so that you could, you know, basically supply the name of the conference, you know, and it would basically put in the skeleton for you, and you wouldn't have to do this by hand.
Tor, you just gave me a minor heart attack. I'm sorry.
Well, it's become a strange dynamic in the industry now where every other conference basically just repeats the same I/O sessions because people can't figure out how to supply their own data into the application that they happen to be using. I mean, I love those talks, but...
Chet's really excited because, you know, he's automatically in every conference there is, even if it's nothing to do with Android.
Are they really upset, Chet, when you don't show up?
They are a bit surprised because there's my name up there, but fortunately there's a lot of stunt doubles that can do a pretty good job of standing in for me. So speaking of conferences, tell me about the Form conference.
Yeah, so you know, we've been talking about Android quite a bit, right? But recently I've shifted a bit to thinking not just about Android but about design.
What?
And I still care about Android, don't get me wrong, and it, definitely in my off hours I all I do is just, you know, think about Android. But one of the things that I've been trying to think about is Google design, not just, you know, Android design, but design across all of Google's platforms. And also, you know, how Google can be a better citizen in the design community at large. So the Form conference was Google's first kind of large scale, highly publicized, or I guess not really highly publicized. It wasn't on TV or anything. But it was Google's main or first big conference for design. And developer relations, along with the material design team and a couple of other folks, developer marketing, we got together and we thought, you know, what can we do for designers to, you know, to first of all, not really share our own thoughts, but kind of foster a lot of great conversations about design, not just about Google design or Android design, but about design and you know, UI UX design in general. So Form was that vehicle for us. It was really kind of the first of many events, hopefully. But that's kind of what it was. It was a small scale event, but it was, I guess, small scale in the sense that it wasn't like 5,000 people like I/O. It was about 300 folks. But that's kind of what we did with Form. We really wanted to get the design, like, I guess, rally the design community around kind of you know, having conversations about lots and lots of different topics.
Is that the conference where I saw like a sort of an animated logo that was kind of like the letters would morph from one to the next?
Yeah, that's right. So there was a custom typeface, not like a standard, you know, TTF or OTF typeface, but it was kind of custom multicolored typeface built for Form by some folks from the material design team, and that was kind of a big part of the branding for the conference. So that's probably what you saw. I actually built the dynamic type generator web-based tools and generating icons and things, right? I built a dynamic type generator for the conference. So you would type in your name and it would generate an animated GIF of the form type morphing around your name.
So is the intention with that conference to do it on an annual or repeating basis, or have you had a repeat from the first time?
No, so our first, the answer to the first question is yes. We do hope to kind of, you know, keep doing it on a somewhat annual basis. The first event was back in November 2014. We're thinking about what to do for our next event or events, plural, right now, but we haven't announced anything yet. But yeah, we certainly want it to be, we actually don't want only to have these larger conferences of 300, 400 people. We also want to have smaller scale, you know, smaller budget events too, and also things we could do around the world. But form is certainly something that we want to repeat.
Yeah, conferences around the world. If you need any guest speakers for the ones in, you know, Hawaii, you know, I might be available.
Absolutely. I would be the first to suggest Hawaii. I was just there, actually.
Yeah, I don't know what I would have to say about design, though, except use tools. Use good tools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been trying to convince the team down in Sydney that there needs to be a developer conference down there that would require my presence, but I've been trying that for 4 years now, and it hasn't worked yet.
Mm. Great city.
I'll keep working.
See, what else have we not covered? We had a long list of things to talk about.
Faces, watch faces.
Oh yeah, watch faces. I love watch faces.
You've been doing a lot of those?
So sort of, not a lot, but I mean, the first interaction I guess I had with watch faces was for Musée, actually. So Musée, like I said, was a wallpaper, right? It's a wallpaper for your phone. I was thinking, hey, wouldn't it be great to see the same, you know, piece of art or photo or whatever it is that's driving your wallpaper on your phone? Wouldn't it be great to see that on your watch? And so I kind of put together this really, really rough prototype before there's an official watch face API. And it kind of felt really cool. I wore it around on my LG G watch for a while, and it was definitely something that I wanted on my wrist. And then when the watch face API started, you know, being fleshed out internally, Ian Lake, who's one of the developer advocates here as well, he had this idea of, hey, let's actually, you know, like release a Musée watch face at the same time as the watch face API is published. So I worked with him. Actually, I got to give him credit. He did almost all the work for porting Musée to the watch, and it's been really cool. I then forked that code and I made a watch face for the Form conference that actually, this kind of brings everything back around. The Form watch face can actually plug into the Musée watch, the Musée wearable app to retrieve the latest Musée image and show that behind the Form type. This is like one of the best things about Android, right? Your apps, not just on a single device, but your apps across devices can just work together in such a beautiful way. It's kind of awesome.
What I liked about the Musée app is that I like having a desktop image, but often it sort of competes with the icons in the foreground. And what Musée does is it really applies like a blur. So you sort of get like a sense of the palette from the picture, but you can't see the details. So it's just kind of like a nice soft background that makes it very easy to see your icons. But then when you double tap on it, you get to see the photo. If you're curious, like, ooh, that looks interesting. Yeah. Does the watch face work the same way, or do you see like a high-res picture of whatever the art or picture is?
Yeah, for the watch, it doesn't actually do any blurring or anything. It just shows the watch, the image as is, simply because there's less to compete for your attention on the watch.
Yeah. And does the time then sit straight on top of it, or is there some kind of like, you know?
Yeah, there's a subtle drop shadow since you have full control over rendering the time as well. Basically, The only thing you don't really have control over is the notification cards or the peeking card, which has plenty of background protection, so you don't need to do any blurring. But the clock is completely up to you, and we just apply a simple drop shadow.
Maybe could you do like visualization, some image detection, so that when the Dali painting with the melting clocks comes on the screen, then you could actually tell the time on there. If you could work on that. I think that would be cool.
That would be an interesting challenge.
Actually, I should point out that the reason I haven't gotten into Musée is because the blurriness that it applies is exactly the problem that I'm having with my eyes. And so I look at my phone and I think, ugh, I need to put my glasses on. So nice. I have enough reminders that my eyes are going.
So you could also, so Musée actually has this feature where you can go into desaturate mode and darken rather than blur. So that might work for you.
I will try that. And then it'll be like I have my corrected sunglasses on instead. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Cool. I'm out of questions. I don't know if we're out of what Roman works on items.
Well, the impression I get of Roman is that he's always working on five things at the same time.
Yeah,
I do most kind of feel that, yeah.
Most of the things I'm working on right now are not released yet, so, yeah.
Oh, shh.
We cannot. Yeah, we don't talk about those here. Well, maybe if you whisper it. So how much of your time do you spend on development projects like the ones we've been talking about versus outreach, versus, you know, doing tutorial videos or going to a conference to participate or articles or whatever?
Yeah, so my role has changed a bit recently, where I'm kind of doing a bit more, Chet, you would know this, management stuff.
Meetings.
Yeah. My calendar is absurd. But anyway, before that, I was spending, I mean, ideally, you know, I loved spending as much time as possible doing actual development. My whole philosophy is you know, to do something like, you know, pretty big, write some code or do some design work, and then use that as the fuel for talking about it rather than just talking about random stuff. When I was doing that, I think it was about 50-50. Ideally, I think for most advocates, you should be doing like 60-40, like spending most of your time, you know, like doing, like practicing what you're about to be preaching, and then obviously going off and talking about it. So it's about 50-50, I guess.
Sounds like a good mix. Actually, it sounds like an ideal mix. I sort of enjoy both of those aspects as well. But it seems like it's kind of tricky if you're in a development organization, you're necessarily focused on product. And if you're in, you know, a developer advocacy role, it seems like there's a lot of pressure to sort of get the word out there.
Yeah.
And then fighting those two tensions to sort of find the sweet spot in the middle is tricky.
Totally.
I think we've reached the end of the interesting content. I don't know if you want to say anything uninteresting before we sign off.
I have many uninteresting things to say, but I will spare you all.
All right, then. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.